Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, welcome to the Football Writers Podcast. My name is Mike Calvin. I'm joined by Jonathan Northcroft of the Sunday Times and David Priest, goalkeeper, columnist, podcaster. It's not quite the night before Christmas, but you get my drift. The World Cup's about to get underway. A month of new stars, old problems, and maybe, just maybe, the birth of a new England team. We're going to look at all eight groups, starting with Russia, the hosts. Look away now, Vladimir Putin.
Yeah, I mean, in the build-up of the tournament last year, I've been thinking, how are Russia going to avoid embarrassment? They're going to have to do something, have to produce something, or I don't know what they're going to do, but they're going to have to figure it out. And they haven't got there. You know, I think they might be like South Africa in 2010, hosting a tournament, but having a really poor team. They've brought back Ignashevich, who's, 39? They seem to have the same players who may or may not fulfil promise that they show, like Golovan and Jagoyev. And the Russian journalists I've spoken to are really negative about their side. Say they're slow, they're unimaginative. You know, Akinfeev's an error-strewn goalkeeper.
Yeah, and he's meant to be the key player, isn't he?
Yeah, well, I mean, He's made mistakes in past tournaments, and you know, there's even more pressure on him this time. Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with him. But he's you're right. He's as a kid, he was seen as sort of like the sort of, I don't know, next Yashin almost. You know, he was that highly rated, and he had injuries to his back, of course. But he just hasn't fulfilled that promise.
Yeah, Saudi Arabia, they've sacked two coaches since qualifying. there to make up the numbers.
Yeah, they look like I think they have the odd good result in at this level, but really, I think they'll be trying to hang in there and maybe win their game with Egypt. That'll be the height of their ambition.
Because there was that weird thing where they basically loaned 9 players to La Liga clubs, and I think one played one game, I think.
Yeah, there might have been a bit of additional funding provided to the La Liga clubs. I mean, yeah, I don't know these players individually. I haven't seen them, but just going by Saudi football, Saudi teams in the past, of very, very little sort of to throw you, very little to suggest that they can perform at this level.
What about Uruguay, David? There's a lot of sort of talk about maybe they're using this as a springboard for 2022. It's quite a young squad. You know, Tabarez, the manager, has been around a lot. What's your view of them?
Well, I mean, they certainly should see themselves as favourites for the for this group. It's, you know, they've got certainly got the firepower in Suarez and Cavani. Yeah, it's, you know, if they can find a way to get the ball, then they're very direct. You know, they get the ball up there quickly and let them, you know, work the magic. But it's a bit of a dream draw for them, really, isn't it?
It is. And what about Egypt? Are they everyone's now favourite second team because of Mo Salah?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, certainly the prospect of Mo Salah at the World Cup is one of the most appetising factors. And I think any neutral will want him to have recovered from his injury and be able to play. I mean, it's an incredible pressure that he bears on his shoulders, because if he's Liverpool's symbol, then he's, you know, he's Egypt's deity at the moment. He you know, his biggest single achievement last season was actually taking Egypt to the World Cup, converting the penalty, and incredible game under pressure. They've also, I mean, I wonder what if Dave knows the guy, but the goalkeeper's interesting. El Hadari, who's 45, in line to become the oldest World Cup player. He was made his professional debut after Jordan Pickford, before Jordan Pickford was born.
Hope for you yet, Dave, isn't there?
Well, I might get the gloves back on, yeah. I have trouble getting out of bed in the morning, never mind playing the World Cup, but it'll be a great story anyway. And they've got a hell of a chance of getting through to the last 16, you know, and they've got good experience in the side. Hector Cooper, the manager, great manager. They're good to watch. They like to press high up the pitch and are quite... I quite like Higazi, from West Brom. I think he's a very good defender.
Mm. So if you have to say who's going out of that group...
Well, if Salah's fit, then Egypt and Uruguay go through for me.
Mm. Yeah. I'm the same, I agree. Group B, if you look at it logically, it should be Portugal and Spain. Mm. What about Portugal?
Yeah, well, I mean... capable of losing 6-0, aren't they, as we've seen in their friendlies. I mean, they've got two centre-backs who are, you know, nearly El Hadari's age, Alves and Pepe, who even in the primes weren't the most reliable. I think Guerrero, who was fantastic at the Euro 2016, has been injured, so I'm not sure what state he's in. Obviously, they've got Ronaldo, they've got Bernardo Silva. You know, William Carvalho is a good midfielder. There's talent there, but it's just such an unbalanced side. But then, you know, 2016 summed them up. They came to Wembley. They were rubbish. They got beaten easily by England, and then they were poor at the start of their group in that tournament as well. And then they end up winning it. So you can't rule them out.
As you know, Ronaldo, has he got the ability to almost like drag a team through a tournament by his own force of will?
Yeah, I mean, he almost did that last time as well. But it's I don't want to write them off too quickly, simply because they do have, even though like I said, the aging defenders were further forward. They've got some special talent as well. And my worry for England was that they don't win enough games in these competitions. Was it six since 66?
Yeah,
you know. But it didn't matter to Portugal in the Euros. You know what I mean? So if it's all about getting through, and they've got mentality. You know, whether they might have the legs at the back, but likes a Pepe, he's a winner.
Coach is good, isn't he?
Yeah.
Coach is good.
Mm. What about Spain? You know, we talked about Salah being a sentimental favourite. I think Andres Iniesta will be here, won't he?
Yeah. I mean, him going out as a World Cup winning captain. I think he's captain now, isn't he? Would be one for the purists. That'd be fabulous. I mean, I'm surprised how few people fancy Spain. I think they've got a good manager who understands the players. They've got some new blood, but they've got some greatness there with you know, your Busquets, Iniestas, Piqué at the back, David Silva. You know, they've got Diego Costa up front to sort of carry the fight. I think then they've got the Escos, Coques, Sol. They've got some great talent. They've got the know-how. Maybe people are just thinking about that weird game against Holland in the last World Cup where it all sort of blew up for them. Mm. But I think they've got a really good chance. I think they've got a really, really good chance in this tournament. And I think they'll get the final.
I think because when we think Spain, we think about the attacking intent they've got. When you know, obviously, they've got Silva Iniesta. They've got strikers who they can adapt to different ways of playing. Obviously, you've got Costa, who's just a nuisance in the bat around, but also a great number nine. Or you've got Aspas, who's you know, can play a false nine. But I think with Spain... going into this tournament, I think they've actually got the best defence.
Mm.
They've got Jordi Alba, Piqué, Ramos,
Carvajal.
Those four will form the best defence.
I mean, and the goalkeeper?
Yeah, of course, David De Gea, obviously.
I mean, best in the world, is he?
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, he didn't look good last night when he dropped that ball against Switzerland, but it was a rare mistake from him, and you're right, I can't see him conceding many at all in this tournament.
Iran, Carlos Kiros, you know, old friend and all that. They'll try and smother, won't they?
They will. I mean, I think one of the shames of the World Cup draw is actually two of the more interesting dark horse teams, if you like, which would be Iran and Morocco, have been paired with Spain and Portugal. I think in different groups you'd fancy either of them to get out and maybe have a run. Kiros, he's been an incredible manager for Iran. taking them to two tournaments in a row is like the peak of their football achievement. They've got good players. They've got, I think it's Azmoun up front, who's a very very decent striker. He will really, really organised, really, oh, don't want to say negative, but he's a very pragmatic coach, hard to score against. And there's a little bit of spice between him and Ronaldo because he didn't vote for him for World Player of the Year, which is a sin in Ronaldo's world.
But overall, do you think both of you, Spain and Portugal, from this one?
I'd say so, but I mean, you know, you talk about Morocco and Iran being a defensive side. Morocco didn't concede in qualifying, you know, and they've got Hakim Ziyech, who's
like the Ajax.
And you know, well, I know this. Van Basten saves an idiot for going with Morocco and not staying with Holland, but he's the one who's at the World Cup this summer, isn't he?
Good to see. You know, I'm a great fan of France. What do you feel?
Well, I'm a great fan of the players. Deschamps he's not a poor manager, but he looks to me a little bit of an old-fashioned manager in his ideas. I think France are quite predictable, despite having so many good footballers. He's got a big decision to make over Pogba because he's already left Rabiot out, which I found very strange. Pogba has not been playing well for France, as he hasn't really been playing well for United. And there's plenty of talent with the likes of Lamar and Fekir to come in. So it's kind of, if he's willing to go beyond his kind of tried and trusted, his old guard, then France might have more of a chance. So certainly when they counter-attack, when they get the talent and the pace in the team, then they are brilliant, I agree. But I'm not sure if he lets them do that enough.
But you look at, there should be a lot of goals in that team. You know,
should be.
Griezmann, Dembele, Mbappe.
Mbappe, yeah. Giroud has actually got a very good international record. He's had a very good international career. Fekir is really exciting, linked with Liverpool at the moment. Lamar, tremendous talent. You know, they might be leaving someone like Mendy on the bench, which is really, you know, shows the talent that they've got going forward.
Mm-hmm. You've got Australia. This is almost like a tournament too far for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what's worrying for me is that obviously they had Ange Postecoglou, who was a big fan of three at the back. They've got through some teething problems playing that, but then they once they got into the stride, they played some good football. I think it gets the best out of Matty Ryan as well because he's great at sweeping up the back and playing out. Now they've got to four at the back again with Van Marwijk, and then they're going to have a new coach. There's going to have a new coach after the tournament, and that's the only problem with me, that it's this is sort of like, it's just a part-time sort of role for Van Marwijk, and it depends whether he can get the best out of the players in that short space of time as well.
Two other dangerous floaters, if you want to call it, with Peru and Denmark. Let's look at Peru. Interesting.
Really interesting. Talented players. I think the Paulo Guerrero being fit is really. Seems to have inspired them, seems to have boosted them. And it's a nice story, you know, that I think the captains of France, Australia, and wrote to FIFA to get this guy on the pitch, and he's a terrific striker, has been. They've had a nice little morale boosting.
Common sense shock.
Yeah, common sense shock, exactly. FIFA, common sense shock. They've had a little beating of Scotland just to get the confidence going, just to remind them of 1978. But yeah, they came through qualifying with momentum as well. You know, they had a bad start, and then I think they reeled off the wins, and then came through the playoffs. So they've got a lot of adventure about them coming in.
Well, you know Denmark well, David, having played there. What's the vibe coming from there?
Yeah, I mean, they're confident, but they're going into tournaments previously. You know, think of all the famous Danish sides that they've had real, not just like, you know, they've got Eriksen this time, who's obviously a world-class talent, but they've had them in numbers in the past. And I think that's... Åge Hareide wasn't the first choice for everyone in Denmark, but he's won them over purely by qualifying. And they've gone back to 4-3-3, which they played under Morten Olsen. It's what how they know their national sides, the identity that they've got, and they'll cause problems. But I'm not overly confident that they'll get through the qualifying round.
Mm. So are we saying probably France and Peru?
I'd say so.
Yeah, I think it might be France and Denmark, but it rests on Eriksen with Denmark, doesn't it?
Yeah, of course. Let's say, I mean, if they can put the shackles, somebody put the shackles on him, then they solve the problem.
Mm. Group D, Argentina. Is this finally going to be Leo Messi's World Cup?
Well, I mean, I don't think so, because he just doesn't have the organisation. I was going to say talent. I mean, there is talent around him, but maybe not at the back. It's similar to Portugal. You know, you look at, it's a very, very patchy team. Up front, some brilliant, brilliant talent. Aguero, I think Higuain might not even start. You know, it shows the quality they've got. It's always been a question for me how Sampaoli's philosophy works with the group of players Argentina have got. You know, Messi, absolutely brilliant as he is not Alexis Sanchez. He's not going to scurry around closing down defenders and tracking back. It'd be stupid to make him do that. You let him be Leo Messi. But, you know, nor's particularly Aguero or Higuain. You've got, I think, Mascherano, they're now playing in midfield again instead of at the back, but his legs are, you know, creaking. I don't think the goalkeeper's particularly great. Don't think the defenders are that good. So there just might not be enough behind Messi to let him fulfil his ambition.
Mm. We've got Iceland in the group. Now, it's the sin which, you know, we dare not mention, you know, in connection with English football, what went on last time. 330,000 people in that country. You know, was it 40 times fewer than there are in Moscow?
Yeah.
How do they do it?
Well, I spent a couple of months over there playing towards the end of my career, and it was a real eye-opener, because it was just coming to the qualification. They just missed out the qualification for Brazil last time, and I watched them against Slovenia, and they got beat 4-2, and Aaron Gunnarsson got sent off early in the game, but they were really in the game at that point, and they were just overrun a little bit towards the end. And it's, you could see that, you know, there was something happening there. And you go around, and as part of my role, sort of the club I was playing at, you know, you'd go to the schools in the afternoon, and the sport was just as important as the academic side, and they've got all this sort of all these facilities that they've invested in, and it was really impressive to see. And you see that all the players in the clubs, if they didn't have full time jobs, then they were out coaching in the afternoon. They were employed to go and coach, and it was they've got a real sort of, I don't know, like, it's a club mentality. Mm-hmm. And trust me, everybody in Iceland, not even in Iceland football, everyone knows each other. Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous for a whole country. They know each other, and there's that bond, there's that closeness. It carries them through. And not just that now, they've actually improved in the last sort of, since I saw them 5 years ago, they've improved year on year, and they look a real force now.
Mm. I was in Croatia a couple of weeks ago, and talking to people over there, they're almost bitter about their team in terms of, you know, we all know the names, Mandzukic, you know, Modric, Perisic, etc. But they're thinking, will they do it for us?
Yeah, I mean, they've got a bit of a golden generation that hasn't really delivered for them, and they've got, you know, the greats of the past to live up to. I don't think for Croatia it'll ever be as good as the 98 World Cup post-independence with that fabulous group of players. And maybe there's a hangover. You know, someone like Modric, from what I read, isn't that popular at home. And what a brilliant footballer he is. But I guess he's not Boban. I guess he's not Sukar. He maybe he can't live up to all of that. You certainly look at their midfield talent and think that, you know, Kovacic, Borisic, Rakitic, Modric, is, you know, Perisic playing wide, that is fantastic. That's as good as anyone. But another team, maybe, you know, Kuluk at the back, a bit old. Maybe another team which is just a bit lopsided in its makeup.
They've got Nigeria, based on what we saw at Wembley at the weekend. How do you see that?
It's difficult to judge them, really, because certainly for the first half, they didn't really show a lot. It was kind of like a bit of a... anti-climax is the right word for them, but it was just they got there, and it was a nothing performance. Maybe I'm taking too much away from England as well as England playing the first half. The second half they come out with a bit more sort of. It seemed like they were trying in the second half, when the first half they just sat off England and they let us play, and it wasn't a great performance by them by any means.
I thought the goalie was doing really well, and it was one of those lessons that you should never tweet mid-game, because I thought Harry Kane was having a really quiet match, and the goalkeeper looked quite promising, and if I'd tweeted that, I'd have looked really stupid.
Never stops me. Yeah. Group B, Brazil.
Yeah.
Time to get the 7-1 out of the system.
I think it's out of the system. I was there at that. I mean, it was one of the most extraordinary football matches I've ever been to. At sort of 6-0, when Germany still had the bit between their teeth, you were thinking they're literally going to have to stop this game. They cannot let this go on. You know, they can't let this happen to the World Cup, the host nation, because it looked like it was going to be 10 at one point. But you know, I wrote a piece about the Brazilian failure at the time, which it was about what I thought was the travesty of that Brazilian team, which just was so unrepresentative of what we associate with Brazil. It was so negative under Scolari. It tried to bully physically. It seemed to be all about, you know, limiting expression rather than giving expression. And then they replaced the Madunga, which was even worse. So I think that's why Tite has had such an effect, because he's just got them back in touch with their identity. They've got incredible results under him. I think 7-1 is gone because they have gone back to that Brazilian era. And Neymar is as important to his team as Ronaldo and Messi are to theirs. Mm.
Is it going to be Neymar's World Cup?
I think so, as long as he stays fit. Obviously, they lost him through injury last time. But I think there was a great piece by Tim Vickery. He was talking about how Brazil were innovators. You know, there's this sort of, I don't know, people just think that they got where they were through talent alone. Yeah. Mm. When through the 50s and 60s, they took bits from Uruguayan football, from Hungarian team of that time, and they knitted it all together. And tactically, they were brilliant ahead of their time. And it was kind of like they've regressed, certainly the two periods under Dunga, where they just regressed to negative football, and they were the total opposite of what they'd been before. And right, Tite, he's returned that as well. Mm. And he hasn't made big personnel changes. No. Obviously, Gabriel Jesus has come in, and
Paulinho, I think, is one of his.
Yeah, exactly. He brought Paulinho back in when he first went out to China, and that's worked, not just for Brazil, but for Barcelona as well.
Mm. What about Switzerland? They drew with Spain. Always difficult to read too much into those sort of friendlies, isn't it?
Yeah, Switzerland are like one of those tennis players who's always in the top four or five but never wins a title. For me, they're really good at the FIFA rankings, but they're just, yeah, they underwhelm. They underwhelm. I think, you know, they've got players that haven't quite become what we thought they might when they were kids, like Xhaka and Shaqiri. Serafizic, that's a terrible pronunciation there, but he looked like a really good striker a few years ago and hasn't quite done it. I just, sorry Swiss people, but I think they're fodder.
Under no pressure, Granit Xhaka looks a world beater. You know, if he's got time in the ball, he can be brilliant. But we're talking about people being in the shop window. I can guarantee you, Shaqiri will have a wonderful tournament. there's no way he's going to get stuck next season.
Yeah, you've got Serbia in the group. They could be quite interesting.
Yeah, they could. I think on paper they don't look all that.
What about Milinkovic-Savic?
Yeah, well, he's really exciting. He's a really exciting footballer. Manchester United are very interested in him, but they're not alone. I believe he was sensational.
Lazio, they
probably will. Lazio are a selling club, but I think they'll demand 60, 70 million for him. So I'm really looking forward to seeing him. As I say, I think on paper they might not look sort of star laden, but I'm expecting them to be a really good team because they're very good in qualifying as a unit. Mm-hmm. And with, you know, maybe just that little bit of quality from him and Subotic at the back gives them something as well. So I think they'll be quite formidable.
Mm. And we're going to get a little look at Costa Rica.
Yeah, I mean, they surprised everyone last time. Mm. I know that I actually went across there. There was a player with a guy in Denmark, Christian Bolaños, he's been in out the side. I don't think he'd be in the start 11 this time. He's 33 now. But just a technically wonderful player, and it took him a little time to adjust. He didn't play a lot in my time at Odense,
but he went on to play for FC Copenhagen, and then he's back playing in Saprissa in Costa Rican League. Mm. And that might be one of the pluses for them as well, because their season's going on now as well. So, you know, there'll be a bit of continuity where, you know, a lot of sides will have had a break and they've got to get going again, where they're coming straight from the middle of their season. So I'd still expect more from them as well. And, you know, as impressive as they were in the last one, they're still a good side. And they're a little bit older and, you know, maybe less legs, but they're still a technically very good side.
Mm. But in terms of, OK, we, you know, we'll take as read that Brazil win the group, who comes second, Serbia?
I think so, but they've said Costa Rica are they've got a lot of know-how. I would still I'd put the money on Serbia, but it wouldn't surprise me if Costa Rica shocked people.
Mm. Group F, Germany might have a chance.
Yeah, they'll do a decent job at this tournament. I don't think they'll win it. I think their peak has gone. I'm very disappointed they're not taking Sané. Obviously, Toni Kroos is a wonderful footballer to watch, and he's exactly the kind of footballer England don't have. But yeah, I think, you know, we know what we're going to get from Germany. We know we're going to get a high level of performance. I just think their tournament's all about the last four and what happens from there, and I'm not quite sure they'll do it this time.
What about Sweden? No Zlatan, no Cruyff?
Well, at least they've got more of a, you know, a team unit rather than just being about one person. But I worry for them a little bit. They, you know, they obviously qualifying ahead of Italy, the normals, like, you know. But it's I don't know. I look at Seb Larsson in midfield, who's you know, seen the best of his career, and even though he's got a, you know, he's very good technically and with set pieces as well, and they've got Marcus who's playing out in the Middle East now, and I don't know. It just seems to be they look out of sync to me for a team to go in, to do anything this tournament.
It's funny. We've got Seb Larsson, we've got Nicholas Bentner, we've got Joe Campbell. We've got Fabianski at the World Cup. It's like a sort of Arsenal
reunion,
Arsenal League Cup 2006 reunion. The kids, but yeah.
I must admit, I look at Sweden and I think maybe because there is no Zlatan, they can actually they want to get out the shadow.
Yeah, it might help. I mean, Zlatan isn't good enough. I just think he wouldn't be capable of playing tournament football now. I don't think physically. Sweden are always there or thereabouts in the games. They never get hammered in tournament football. They're pretty organised. They know what they're about. So they'll hit a certain level that other teams in that group will have to get beyond.
Mexico?
Well, my top World Cup fact that I learnt from reading World Soccer on the train here was that apart from Germany and Brazil, only one team has got to the last 16 in the last six World Cups, and it's Mexico. But they've never got beyond it. So, you know, that's their bar. They've got some good players. They've got a good team, some young talent coming through as well. Maybe struggle to score goals, but I think they, you know, last 16, I think.
Which is obviously bad news for South Korea.
Yeah, I think you know, even by their standards, I don't think this is a great squad. Obviously, they've got Son Heung-min, so you know, everything rests with him. All their hopes rest with him. But yeah, I can't see him getting out of the group.
Now, England's group, you know, we talk about Belgium as, you know, a team of stars, individuals. Will they actually gel?
Well, if they put it together, they'll be really good. But I don't think they'll gel enough to win the tournament. And that has to be their ambition. It's their golden generation. They have got all that quality. And I think they have to be thinking of that. But I'm just not sure if, you know, if Hazard and De Bruyne play together as well as they should, if the egos will work in that squad, if Martinez has got enough of a grip on it. Thierry Henry might be a help to them at the tournament, of course, with his experience.
How important is it that the players believe in the coach or the manager?
Do you know what? I mean, ordinarily I'd say that it was really important, but I've played in some sides where, you know, we've had success despite not really getting on with the manager. And it might be because of that, you know. But I think with this group of players, you know, you can see that it's there's friction with the Belgian squad, but then you look at the England squad, there's a lot of togetherness there now. And like I said, it's a real strength, the manager they've got now in Gareth Southgate. You know, one part of me thought that he's making all these decisions because he's being strong, because there was no, you know, if he didn't do well, then he'd be out. But there seems to be a plan there for the next couple of, you know, certainly the next tournament anyway. And I think everything's coming together behind the scenes. Everything that was, you know, this DNA that, do you know what, I even mocked myself because I was that used to being given a blueprint after blueprint after blueprint. And I thought it was just another one of those that was following. But they're following through with everything now. And Dan Ashworth, you know, everything that he's putting in place, you know, they're sticking to it now. And that's more important than come up the right, not just come up with the right process, but sticking to it as well, regardless of what happened.
Yeah, because that's a really good point about the broader issue. And also, you know, we've been to enough World Cups with England where it's basically, you know, paranoia city. It's a much different feel to the place, isn't there?
There is. And one thing the DNA project has done is, I think it's removed the idea that England are about individuals. You know, there's a plan, there's a way of playing, there's this, there's that. It's about St George's Park, there's young teams, it's not just the England seniors. It's ceased to be that personality-led environment. And maybe it's also because there aren't the stars, you know, Harry Kane aside, there aren't these, you know, the sort of sacred cows. That perhaps helps as well. But I think also, as we've touched on, Gareth Southgate's intelligence of his management, his understanding of his group, his lack of ego, I think, also sends out that message.
Final group, Group H, Poland. Lewandowski is on the market now, it seems. Is this a key sort of selling point for him? Is he going to have to go out there and prove that he can still do it?
No, that's something to be plenty of takers. You know, he's one of the best around. But they've showed a lot of promise, you know. Semi-finals in the Euros, and they have got some talent, you know. Certainly in the goalkeeping department, they've got a lot of strength and depth, and I like both Szczesny and Fabianski. I think Fabianski's had a great season, very underrated, and he's there.
Because it's interesting. I was over in Poland a couple of months ago and went to the Federation, and they were saying that they were hugely impressed with England's model. They were just trying to replicate that to a degree. So, imitation, best form of flattery.
Yeah, of course, yeah. But, I mean, this is one of those groups where I think, you know, Japan have posed the outsiders. The rest of them have got a pretty equal chance. So it's really up for grabs, this group, I think.
Yeah. Senegal, you've got Sadio Mane as a talisman for them.
Yeah, they've got decent performers in there. Koyate, Sako, Mane's a fantastic footballer. And I think, you know, one of the things that was interesting to me at the Champions League final was you see certain players, how they perform at under the highest scrutiny, and he was one that stepped up, whereas others maybe didn't look at quite at that level. But I think that showed what Sadio Mane's got. I think they might be the best of the African nations, actually. I think they might get out of that group and play some really exciting football.
I've got big hopes for Senegal. And Koulibaly at the back.
Yeah, great player, isn't he?
He is everything you want from a centre-half, especially today. You know, he's a great passer of the ball, very cute with the ball, but also, I mean, you've seen the goal that he scored against Juventus. Yeah. And, you know, corner, just put it into the box and he just ran, he just attacked it. He was 2 feet above everyone else and he attacks the ball so brilliantly. He's aggressive the way he defends. And, I really hope that they... If we play them in the last 16, I'll be fearful.
Mm. Right. What about Colombia? You know, James Rodriguez last time... has done nothing really since, to be perfectly honest, has he? Are they going to be, and they struggled in qualifying, are they going to be basically the ones who miss out with Japan?
I'm not sure. I mean, they've got Falcao back, who obviously missed the last World Cup and seems to have come back to something like his best. James will be the hopes will rest on him, and if you go by his Bayern Munich form, then they might not get out of the group. But something in me sort of looks at what he did at the last tournament, and he may be inspired again. I think he might want to move himself. He needs a move, so it could inspire him to do well.
It'll be a worry for them that the likes of Ospina, Falcao, Rodriguez. They haven't been regulars. They haven't been playing a lot of football. It might work in their favour, because they might be fresher. You never know. But I don't think it's a great great plus.
Okay, so final question, really. Which team will surprise us in the opening rounds?
Oh, that's a good one. I think Tunisia might be surprisingly dogged. I'll go for Senegal. I think Senegal will not just get out of that group, but as I say, will give us something to watch a bit.
David? No, you stole my thunder there, because they're my side that I think will, you know, like I said, there's every chance they can cause an upset if we play them in the last 16. They've got lots of Premier League experience, lots of European football experience, and it's top clubs as well. So it's they're going to be a tough challenge. Mm-hmm.
Well, I might be horribly wrong, but I've got a strange hunch that Sweden will do well. Enjoy the games. Thanks for joining us here on the Football Writers Podcast.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.